The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my well-dressed, esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, on the college football gridirons in November, the phrase, the defense rests, is not a legal term. We're going to talk about a Trojan horse that may only be a pony. And if someone asks you tomorrow how you did on Wednesday, and you tell them plus zero, why, that's a good thing.
That may well be a good thing, Dave, but let's start with first takes for a Wednesday. It finally got cold in Vegas last night. Is that what you're going to talk about?
No, that's not what I'm going to talk about.
Thank you.
But it's not going to be sports either. Sort of not sports. We make a lot of literary references on this show, a lot of musical references, some that Teddy, of course, doesn't always get. It's a cultural thing. But we got the new Tom Waits CD yesterday, and because it's a light card in sports, the NBA opening night that was to be, obviously wasn't, we got to give it a run-through, and of course, when we do that, nothing else matters. It does relate to sports because, again, when we talk about the human element of sports, we want to find things that are out there on the periphery that help us to understand the human condition a little bit more. Waits an absolute genius at bringing that to us. Pretty good listen so far. If you haven't picked up a copy, you should go and get it. And one absolute classic. Sometimes this will happen, and you're probably like me in this regard. You'll play something, and you'll go, oh, that's good. And you'll play it again, and then again. Last Leaf, Tom Waits, Keith Richards, a guitar, nothing else. Simply brilliant. One that will probably end up in our own musical hall of fame. Teddy, while I was listening to that, what were you doing on a cold and chilly evening?
What was I doing? I was watching football. You know, you don't want to talk about sports. I want to talk about sports. It's a sports show. And, of course, this show's not about patting ourselves on the back when we have a right pick or ripping ourselves necessarily when we have a wrong one. We will always go back, obviously, with post-mortem and that sort of thing and talk about the right and wrong decisions that we made and the bounces of the game that affected those decisions. But when the losing team scores 60 in a college football game and you have the over, you got to be patting yourself on the back a little bit, a right side winner. But at the same time, when we talk about overs, and we're going to talk about some of this in Market Watch in just a moment, but when we talk about overs, the most important thing, nothing to do with yards, nothing to do with how well the quarterbacks play or how bad the defenses are, you need two things to cash over tickets. Real simple. You need big play touchdowns, and boy, we had that in plenty last night, right in the first quarter, you know, the back-to-back kick return touchdowns for Northern Illinois, including the one on the opening kickoff. That's nice to see. And the other thing you want when you have an over ticket, you need red zone execution. So in general, when you're looking for, what overs might I be interested in betting? What type of overs make sense? Big play potential, red zone execution, 1 and 1A towards cashing that ticket. And similarly, with unders, you're looking for teams that don't necessarily have that type of potential for big plays. And of course, have their struggles in the red zone. Plenty of teams like that to talk about. But that also lets us transition right here into Market Watch. Because it is November, you alluded to this in the tease at the Open, Dave, we have to talk about defenses or think about defenses, particularly in college football, a little differently at this time of year than we did earlier in the season.
If you watched the line moves last week, you would have noticed on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday a fair amount of money bet to college totals over. You're going to see more of the same this week. There's a reason for that, and it's something a lot of wise guys have figured out the last couple of seasons, and we certainly play accordingly. Defense changes now in November. A lot of this has to do with the spread offense, which really took college football, I don't want to say by surprise, but by storm over the past decade. Defenses had to change. You had to get more nickel packages out there. You needed to get smaller and quicker defensive players to be able to cover those offenses that spread the field and use speed. Here's the problem. Smaller and quicker players, when forced to make tackles over the course of 3 or 4 months, they start to wear down. And as we get into November, we see tackling start to fall off. We see more yards after catch. We see rushing become a bigger part of the game. And Teddy talked about the red zone. Well, one of the ways you stop people, you got to make tackles. We find these smaller guys don't tackle as well. So as we get into November and we talk about defenses fading, of course, we have to go to a basketball coach. Guys, there was a great quote from Marv Harshman, longtime coach at Washington in what was then the Pac-10, about why he kept recruiting bigger players all the time. And we're just going to paraphrase. We tried to find the exact quote, couldn't quite do it. He said, you know why I like big guys? Because when they get tired, they're still tall. When fast guys get tired, they become slow. Well, here's what happens in November. The big guys in the offensive line, they're still big. But those smaller defensive backs that need to come up and make tackles, they're starting to wear down.
Yeah, and of course, we're talking about decent teams here. We're not even talking about bottom feeders. But when we start to get to the teams at the lesser end of the college football spectrum, teams that aren't going bowling, that are simply playing out the string at this stage of the campaign, teams that have offensive weaknesses that have forced the defense to be on the field for extended stretches this season, it tends to get even worse for the very bad teams in college football on the defensive end of the field. And that's why you see teams at the very bottom end of this college football spectrum, sometimes they'll get shut out or they'll score 3 or they'll score 7, and the game will still go over the total because the defense is that bad. So one thing that I always like to look for when I'm doing my box score analysis, only one piece of the equation, but you have to do the box score analysis every week. It's certainly a big piece of the equation. I'm looking for how many field goals defenses are starting to force for these bad squads. When they're not forcing any field goals and teams are simply scoring one touchdown after the next in the red zone, those teams become dead nuts fades.
So part of our advice to you is look for these little elements that we've talked about. And if you find them and you think, okay, this game is going to go over, be ready to pull the trigger on Wednesday or Thursday. There are going to be a lot of people possibly getting ahead of you on that. So market timing, something so essential in these next couple of weeks, try to get that on your side.
Yeah, no question. I mean, even last night's game, when we talk about it, Dave, we on the show, over 67 was the number that we quoted, and that was the number as we went on air. By the time we got off air, it was already up to 67.5, 68 in most places. By the time the game kicked off, 69.5 and even 70s popping up on the live odds screen. So it didn't make a difference last night, but if you're getting 3 points, the worst of it, on every total that you bet, on every over that you bet, it's not necessarily going to be a positive thing. And that means, of course, when we talk about positive things, we have to talk about all the great emails and questions we've been getting in the posting forums. Please keep those emails coming in. SportsDay@covers.com. Again, SportsDay@covers.com. We're going to answer emails later in this show. We have the toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. And, of course, you can get involved in the covers.com community right now. Active threads and discussions, covers.com/posting forums. When we come back, we're going to exhume some stuff. It's post-mortem time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time to head into the operating room for the postmortem, where we're going to go deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Yeah, let's start with the USC Trojans and talking about the questions that existed around this program after the Pete Carroll departure and the Lane Kiffin arrival. It has a feel, certainly, of a program in transition, and especially with scholarship reductions in place and no postseason opportunities at all. They can't even play in the conference championship game, should they be good enough to reach it this December. So the Trojans were really under the microscope the last couple of weeks, where they played a couple of very high-profile games. We saw them dominate Notre Dame in a wire-to-wire win, an easy Vegas Sports Day Play of the Day win for those of you who were watching. And then last week, obviously taking Stanford to triple overtime before coming up short in the Coliseum on Saturday night. You know, nothing that you can take away negative from that USC performance. They were phenomenal, both sides of the football, really, from start to finish in that ball game. So here's a Trojan team, lots of questions. Have those questions been answered, or is it time to give this program a clean bill of health?
The problem when we look at Southern Cal is you want to give them an excellent diagnosis. Wow, you whipped Notre Dame. You were right there toe-to-toe with Stanford. It's all good, but there's a spot on the X-ray, and I think we might see that start to come in this week. Teddy had mentioned the fact that they still can't play in a bowl game. They're not eligible for the conference championship. So there is that little spot on the X-ray that says, wait a minute, what did they do this week? That Notre Dame game really mattered. Notre Dame beat them in the Coliseum last year. Lane Kiffin afterwards said that that loss bothered him more than any other as a football coach. They came back and they manhandled Notre Dame. Much easier win than even the final score could show. They were every bit as good as Stanford. They wanted those games. Last year they had lost a very close game to the Cardinal. But now what happens this week? The result is of no consequence. Again, you're not going to go to a bowl. You're not eligible for the conference championship. You're off of a triple overtime game that was similar to a heavyweight fight going 15 rounds. You have a short transition before playing at Colorado on Friday night. And one of the problems that college football teams have is when their opponent doesn't excite them. Notre Dame and Stanford did. When they look at films of a Colorado team that's winless in the Pac-12 this year, there's not much to get you excited in practice. For as good as Southern Cal looked those past 2 weeks, don't be surprised this week if the Trojan horse is instead just a pony. Time for the Senior Bowl this week, LSU-Alabama. It's Wednesday. We held off. Let's start talking about the game because we know it's one that you want to hear. When we talk about Senior Bowl in our coroner's inquest, that means we're going to take the last 4 years of head-to-head matchups between teams. That is the career arc of the fifth-year seniors. And in this day and age in college football, where so many players redshirt, most kids are on campus for 5 years in order to play for four. Here's what's interesting about this one. That four-year period, that is also the arc of Nick Saban versus Les Miles. Those are their four head-to-heads. So we've got some good data to break down. These kids have been around for this whole cycle. These coaches have been around for this whole cycle. The problem is, as we break it down, does it give us anything or does it confirm just how close this series has been?
Well, let's take a look at the hard numbers. Yeah, these programs are close, real close. Wins over the last 4 years. Each team has won twice. Home teams, they've won twice. Road teams have won twice as well. The scoreboard, LSU 101, Alabama 98 in regulation. They did go to overtime back in 2008. Against the spread, LSU's covered the number by a cumulative total of 11 points. But the bottom line is, we're talking about some pretty close stuff. None of the outcomes between these two teams over the last 4 years have been decided by double-digit margins, all single-digit victories. The biggest margin coming when Alabama won 24-15 back in 2009. That was a game where the Crimson Tide trailed in the second half of that ballgame before staging a comeback. Dave, I'm in a position here. We're going to have to push ups mid-show, of course, here at Vegas Sports Day. Sports Day, we have to do push-ups for our mistakes. I already got eyes going. I've got typos. We got push-ups galore coming during this next break. But let's finish talking LSU-Alabama before we talk about our workout routines. The bottom line, in the NFL, there's kind of a rule of thumb. where we talk about, certainly among professional bettors, when we talk about two quality teams, two relatively even teams, when you can take plus four or more with either squad, you tend to do it in a heartbeat. That's almost an automatic play. Certainly, when we look at the college end of the equation, that strategy probably paid off a fair bit as well. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But from a gut reaction, yeah, Alabama was the more hyped team coming into the season. They certainly opened up number one, and they've lived up to all expectations. But LSU, more than capable of winning tough games on the road, and this series has shown that these two teams are very, very close. Not much is going to separate LSU and Alabama on Saturday.
When we come back, Teddy will still be doing push-ups, so I may have to open the next segment. I'm not doing push-ups. We're talking Tom Waits instead of sports. That's just fine. We've got some interesting emails coming in, and two segments in a row focusing on LSU-Alabama. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
It would have worked. Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to answer some viewer and forum questions and emails. And we're going to start right here with a letter from Larry in Atlanta. Quote, on yesterday's show, you talked a lot about teams bringing running backs in for tryouts this week. But doesn't that put those teams at a real disadvantage? Can a guy just show up and go right in the lineup without really knowing the playbook?
If there's a position in the NFL where you can, it is running back. Think about it. You don't run sophisticated pass patterns down the field. Except for picking up the occasional blitzer, you have no reads in the blocking game. They hand you the ball and you run with it. And most NFL teams, the playbooks are kind of similar. Even the numbering is similar. Odd numbers to one side, even to the other. So there's the 2-4-6 holes on the right. There's 1-3-5 over on the left. It's actually pretty easy for running backs to step in. We get to our insider six-pack today. We'll talk about a few that might be on the field fresh for their teams this week. Naturally, there's a caliber issue if you're not as good as the guy you're replacing. But of all positions in football, probably the easiest to step right in is running back. Let's go to the covers forum. Teddy, this one comes for you, and this is from Kush J. He says, hey, Teddy, you say you play poker. Any chance I can play with you? First, it's how good he is, of course. Where do you play? Stakes or games you play? If you have time to answer. We've got time. Push-ups are later.
Yeah, exactly. But I love when guys from the forum are saying, hey, yeah, I'd love to play some poker with you, because the old adage, you know, if you look around the table and you don't see the sucker in 5 minutes, you're the sucker. certainly my poker game right now, I'm not playing anywhere near the level that I was playing, say, 5 years ago. Certainly during season, there's something about, doing a live podcast for 40 minutes every day that takes a little bit of extra time. And of course, as we transition from strictly football here into football and basketball combined, November tends to be a very busy month. So at this time of year, if I play once a month, I'm happy. After March Madness ends and we start to get into baseball season and the pace of things change a little bit, I tend to play certainly a little bit more often. And then over the summer months, when the World Series is in town, I play every year. I'd like to play two or three World Series events on a yearly basis. Still waiting for my first gold bracelet, but it'll come. But the bottom line is, what levels and limits do I play? Mostly when I go out and play, to hang out for a couple hours, I'll be playing 2-5, no limit. In terms of where I play, I'm happy to play. I like the MGM card room. Nobody else seems to do that. Bellagio card room certainly stands up. The Wynn is always good. I like the card room at Aria. But there's not any one place where I'm definitely going to go. I guess Caesars is another place that I'll play there. That's, tournaments at Caesars are pretty good. So when I'm playing live games, I'll mostly play 2-5. When I'm playing tournaments, it just depends on what the buy-ins are. I like to play those mid-range tournaments and one or two big ones every year. Thanks for the question, Kush J. And when you come to town, maybe we can sit down and battle it out at the card table. And now, of course, Enough with the poker talk. Enough with the Vegas talk. It's inside the numbers talk. Dave, what do you got for us?
We come at the inside the numbers segments from a variety of directions. And someone asked once, how do you always come up with these different looks from so many different angles? Well, sometimes we just steal them. And that's what we've done today. Thanks to our good friend Mark Lawrence. Boy, we go back a long, long, long way for this. As we focus on Alabama LSU, which we know a lot of you want to deal with this week, we're going to basically just literally steal some research that Mark did. So you've got two undefeated teams meeting in November. Doesn't happen a lot. You might think it comes up more often. It really doesn't in this day and age. So what tends to happen when you've got two teams at that level playing? Well, when we go inside the numbers for Wednesday, there's something that probably will not come as a surprise to you. The underdogs fare well. There have been 60 games since 1980 that had two teams that were 6-0 or better going head-to-head. The underdog has cashed better than 2 out of 3, 40-19-1 against the spread. Tells you a little bit of something about a team playing well. Obviously, if they're undefeated, they're playing well, getting points. Just a little more food for thought, Teddy, before Alabama LSU, which we will break down for you in Money Time on Friday, but give you a little food for thought along the way.
And just an FYI, we may have a little debate on that game. Not sure that Dave and I are going to be focused on the same side when the Crimson Tide and the Tigers battle this weekend. When we come back, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
It's time to drop a six-pack of knowledge on you for the upcoming football weekend. Yeah, so I spit every time I do it. What are you going to do? It's a spittle show, you know. Think about what sports day looks like when you're sitting in front of here. The computer screen every day just spittled up by the time we're through. But enough with that. Let's talk insider six-pack. And we're going to start with the Georgia Bulldogs. And when you look at the depth chart at running back for Georgia this week, well, there really isn't any. There's no depth chart whatsoever. Isaiah Crowell, Carlton Thomas, Ken Malcolm, all suspended for the coming weekend. Richard Samuel has been lost for the season after having ankle surgery this week. Crowell, of course, fifth in the SEC in rushing. Thomas and Samuel both with over 200 yards on the ground. So the number one running back on Georgia's depth chart right now, he's 5'6", 174-pounder, Brandon Harton. I'm not going to call him a bull between the tackles. Number two, 5'9", 180, Kyle Karampelis. Another guy who may not be able to bull for those tough yards between the tackles. Both of those individuals earned their way onto the team by walking on. Neither one was offered a scholarship coming out of high school. So don't be surprised if the fullback, Xander Ogletree, moves to running back. And even cornerback Brandon Boykin could get some opportunities to carry the football for Georgia this coming weekend.
Also in that same game, something that just emerged this morning that'll be worth following, and we'll update this for you later in the week as we get more news. New Mexico State might hold quarterback Matt Christian out. He's got a shoulder injury. Could certainly play if they had a chance to win the game this week, but here's their thinking. They're still bowl eligible. They're not going to beat Georgia, even if he does play. Maybe let him get back to full health and maybe steal a couple of wins to be bowl eligible later. Some good news at Arizona under Tim Kush so far. Great attitude from the kids on the field. They dominated UCLA wire-to-wire 2 weeks ago. Actually played a good game at Washington Saturday night. If you didn't stay up to watch the flow in that one, they had the lead and the ball in the fourth quarter, but turned it over three times in their final eight offensive snaps. Now the not-so-good news. Dan Buckner, terrific season at wide receiver, 38 catches, almost 600 yards. He's going to be out for a couple of weeks. Tough loss for a team that likes to spread the field and is getting great quarterback play out of Nick Foles. But here's one of these little conundrums that comes up when you have an interim coach. Safety Adam Hall re-injured his knee against Washington on Saturday. They're not sure if he could play the rest of the season. Hall has played to a point where he could redshirt and get this year of eligibility back. But here's the problem if you're Kish. You're not guaranteed to be the coach next year if Hall comes back. Do you try to get him healthy, maybe win the big game against Arizona State later so that you can keep your job? Or do you run the risk of saying, you know what, it's better for the kid if he takes the rest of the season off, hurting yourself and your chances to possibly be the head coach next year?
Let's talk about the Cleveland Browns for a moment here. And yesterday we talked about the open auditions that Browns were going to have at running back this week, and they didn't make their first move yesterday. They signed Thomas Clayton. They released wide receiver Brian Robisky, an Ohio State grad who has not really panned out at the NFL level. Clayton's been all over the league in recent years. He was on the 49ers roster. He was on the Browns roster. He was on the Patriots roster, the Seahawks, just over the last 5 years. But even being on all those rosters, how about this? 7 carries for 17 yards, no pass receptions. If Peyton Hillis can't go this coming weekend, and there's a decent possibility that Hillis won't be able to go with his lingering hamstring issue, guess what? This guy we're talking about, Thomas Clayton, going to be number 2 in the Cleveland Browns running back rotation. He's going to get some carries.
Tampa Bay is going to get a lot of carries to LeGarrette Blount. Missed their trip to London, or missed the game in London, made the trip, couldn't play against the Bears. And we saw what happened to that Tampa Bay offense later in the game when backup Ernest Graham, who'd been a good fill-in for Blount, also couldn't play. The offense had a lot of struggles. We saw interceptions become a part of the Josh Freeman curriculum. Here's going to be the issue with Blount, though, and let's watch this as the weeks unfold. He's a good first and second down runner, gets hard yards between the tackles, doesn't mind contact. But Graham was the third down receiving back. Blount's also going to take that role over this week. Could playing every down start to wear LeGarrette Blount down just a little bit as we head deeper into November and then the December part of the schedule, both from betting Tampa Bay standpoint, and we know you fantasy guys ask a lot of questions about this, we're going to be watching Blount very carefully.
And this one's for our friend Joe, who always likes to hear the latest on the Raiders news and notes. And, of course, we've ripped Oakland, we've ripped them pretty good. We ripped them a new one when we talked about the Carson Palmer trade. Obviously, 2 number ones for Carson Palmer seemed to be a little bit of a steep price for Oakland to pay, and had the makings of a deal that Al Davis would have made if he was still with us. But in this instance, we're not going to rip Palmer and say, hey, it's the worst NFL trade of the last 20 years since that legendary Cowboys-Vikings deal back in, what was that, 1989 or something? But at least Oakland did something right this week. They made a savvy move on Tuesday, signing former Bengal T.J. Houshmandzadeh, who really flamed out in his tenure with Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks. He was with Cincinnati for 6 years with Carson Palmer at quarterback, including 3 of those seasons where Raiders head coach Hugh Jackson was the Bengals' offensive coordinator. So now we have the receiver, the quarterback, and the OC from some of those high-flying Bengal offenses of the previous decade. And also a good fit on the field, not just with a familiarity and comfortable nature of the staff and the players. Houshmandzadeh does his best work as a slot receiver, where he can help spread the defense better to use the speed of the other Oakland wide receivers down the field. So it's also worth noting this contract has not been completely finalized, which means the Raiders haven't had to cut anybody yet. Someone on that roster is going to get cut in the next 24 hours. I wonder who it's going to be.
It's got to be an awkward feeling coming into practice as you look around the locker room knowing one of us is gone and it better not be me. Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. We had mentioned those defensive injuries early in the week. We're getting a little bit of clarification and a little bit of intrigue added to the Steeler practices. Lamar Woodley, who went down in the second half against New England, going to be out for at least 2 weeks. That's another bad blow for a linebacking core that's just been so decimated. But James Harrison is cleared to return to practice this week. They don't know if he's going to be good enough to play. They're not going to let us know. They're not going to let the Ravens know. It's the good old game time decision. But here's part of why they're milking that. They had asked the coaches yesterday, what are you going to do if you're so depleted at linebacker? Will you go out and try to sign someone? Very good answer from Mike Tomlin on that front. We have some flexibility. Generally, our answers are in-house. So if we're out of in-house linebackers, some of those answers might be on the defensive line. We're very multiple defensively. At this juncture, we are open to all potential solutions, but we're not going to go grasping for straws outside of our building. Here's a little hint to what he's talking about. Pittsburgh on defensive practice yesterday, some 4-3 alignments, something they have not used in a long, long time.
Malinsky, between now and the end of the month, I think we're going to bring in a ringer somewhere, and one of us is going to get cut.
Between now and the end of the month, he says that on November 2nd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much better on like the 28th, the 29th, November 2nd. This could be a long month.
Yeah. All I'm saying is bring your A game because somebody's getting cut. All right. When we come back, we're going to put all of this information, all of this news to work for you. It's money time.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, it's money time! And no NBA, no Major League Baseball, college hoops doesn't start till next week. It's a fairly light slate tonight for sports bettors. There is one game. We're going to break it down as best we can. And, of course, that one game, well, we're going to go to Athens, Ohio. Right now, Temple, -3.5, total 47.5 in that ball game. The Owls and the Bobcats in a MAC showdown.
And actually a heck of a showdown. There are some compelling elements in so many different areas on this game. So let's break them all down for you, and we'll see if we can find a direction. One of the starting points, not quite a Senior Bowl breakdown, but let's go back and look at the last two games in the series. Ohio an underdog both times. Last year, a 10-point road dog at Temple to win the game 31-23. It was actually easier than that. Temple scored last. 2 years ago on this field, as a small home dog, Ohio routes Temple 35-17. That's back-to-back games where Ohio had a double-figure lead in the fourth quarter against this opponent. That mashing ground game Temple used against the softer defenses in the Mid-American Conference hasn't worked against a Frank Solich team. This is an odd line for a team to be favored by this much against an opponent that's whipped them 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and Temple's been a great bully. They've cashed a couple of tickets for me this year in that bully role. I like them as road favorites in general, and they've simply annihilated the weaker teams on their schedule. But you look at Temple's three losses, and they've had the same flaw in all three of them. The defense has been good throughout, but the offense simply hasn't been able to move the football against the better Ds they've faced. We certainly saw it in the game against Penn State where the offense didn't move the ball at all in the second half. We saw it in the loss to Toledo where the offense managed only 13 points, and even the loss before the bye to Bowling Green, we saw Temple really get shut down in that ball game. Good team to lay points with, big points, not as much in the tighter games. And certainly we talk about Bernard Pierce, who's Temple's all-everything running back, a guy who has the potential to be playing on Sundays. Well, Bernard Pierce has not been healthy. He still has a lingering hamstring issue and has been limited in practice. Not sure if he's going to be 100% against the Bobcats tonight.
You'll see Pierce on the field tonight, and you'll see a pretty good Temple running game, and you think, okay, they pile up those stats because they run well. You do what you do best. I know also the first time you see a 3rd and 10 tonight, you'll know why they run so much. They just can't pass. Chester Stewart, our good friend Arnie Lang would call a squad man at quarterback. They didn't want him to be the starter this year. He's been hanging around the program seemingly more than 5 years. Just not a very good passer. Good athlete, competes hard, not a good passer. So here's a home dog with a major edge at quarterback. Tyler Tettleton for Ohio is a guy we like an awful lot. Sophomore year, already playing well above those years. In terms of experience, 17 touchdown passes, only 5 interceptions. Passing game goes to Ohio. Running game, Ohio is going to lose. But one of the things we'll talk about in this flow, and we don't talk about it very often, the kicking game. Because one of the reasons why Temple doesn't try to throw that much, you trust your defense. Number 5 in the country statistically. Obviously, they're not the 5th best because of the schedule, but they're good. You run and work field position, and look at a kicker, Brandon McManus. 2nd in the country this year, averaging almost 48 yards per punt. They're awfully good at turning the field over. So here comes the second element that's fascinating tonight. We talk about the side, the 3.5 aspect. Temple's played 7 straight unders. That is a long streak that we don't see in sports very often. Certainly at the professional levels, You very rarely will see a team either cover or fail to cover seven straight or go over or under seven straight. College football, a little bit different. The markets don't have to adjust because the odds makers won't get, or the books won't get stung by Temple having seven in a row in a particular direction. It's not like money rushes in. So here's a running game. Here's a defense. Here's a punting game, all geared towards playing that. But Teddy, when something reaches seven in a row, don't you get that little temptation to think, maybe it's time to turn?
Well, each of the last 2 years, these teams have gone over the total. And we talked at the top of the show about some of the things you look for when you're betting overs. You want red zone execution. You want big play potential. Temple doesn't really have either one of those. In terms of big play potential, they have none. I shouldn't say none, because there are times that Pierce or his counterpart, was it Matt Brown, who offers kind of a change of pace between the tackles for the Owls. Those two guys have the potential to break some tackles and get into the end zone. But by and large, this is not a team that scores a lot of big play touchdowns, unless they get blocked punts or that sort of thing. Ohio has that potential. Ohio does have the playmakers really on both sides of the field. They scored a number of defensive and special teams TDs this year. And they do have, as you mentioned, with Tyler Tettleton, a quarterback who can make plays to the receivers downfield. But Temple's defense is really good. It's better than Ohio's defense, and it's healthier than Ohio's defense, a defense that has suffered from some injury concerns throughout the course of the campaign. And we look at the hard numbers for Temple. I mean, number nine in the country in run defense, 252 yards a game. Number five in total defense for Temple. I mean, this is a team that's finding ways to make stops, and nobody, with the exception of Toledo, and Toledo kind of put that game away with some scores in the second half, but that's the only team that has moved the football with any degree of efficiency against this Temple defense. Ohio U, their only two wins since September have come against Kent and Akron, two MAC bottom feeders. Not sure that Bobcats offense is going to be capable of moving the ball up and down the field against a Temple defense that's really, really good.
So as we get through the details on this one, you're waiting for a drum roll, and instead we're going to give you the sound of one hand clapping. This is going to be a plus zero day for us. And I know you've been waiting since the opening tease to understand what that is. If you haven't read something we've written on their website in the past, you might not. If you play sports every day for a living over the course of a calendar year, you're liable to lose about 120 to 150 of those 365 days, maybe even a little bit more. That's just the nature of the beast. Plus zero means that you didn't lose. You broke even for the day. That's better than those 120 to 150 losing days. So for today's play of the day, we have a new category for you. On Wednesday, we're going to go plus zero. We think there are just too many confusing elements here, given the history of these teams the last 2 years, and also that Temple total streak that may have run too far. That means that there haven't been many bounces of the ball or little fluky things that happen to produce points. You stretch that pendulum too far, that starts to happen. So for today, it's plus zero, which means when we see you tomorrow, our bankrolls will be in the same place. Not a bad thing.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, again, when you're betting every day, 365 days a year, there are times, hey, it's on TV, guess what? I'll watch it. I'm not going to bet it.
And I can rerun the Waits album again tonight.
Exactly. It's just one of those days. We saw some potential progress this morning with the NBA talks. We'll have college basketball. We'll have NBA. Don't fret. We will have a few days where we're going to take the old El Paso. Today is one of those days. And that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much. Really, thank you for taking time out of your busy day to watch our show. And, of course, for Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the game, and good luck.